Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
Hey, Jane Marie. That's still the best intro song going in radio. I don't care. I don't listen to any other programs, but man.
Yeah, it's award-winning.
You can't get better than that.
Yeah, that's right.
How apropos.
Yep.
Right. Good morning, everyone. Jane Marie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law. It could be about a will. It could be about an estate. It could be about a relative who needs skilled nursing at home or elsewhere. You know, real fun stuff like that. It's a call-in show, and you can reach us at 518-476-5900, or you can see us in one of our four offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston. Good morning, Jane Marie. How are you?
I am well. I am feeling bad for our coworkers at the Schenectady Walk this morning.
Well, me too. I looked at the map, and there's a chance that it stops. Well, I think the rain's going to stop west to east, I think.
I guess
I'm
so.
Hoping.
Yeah.
So maybe they got a better shot than we do here in Latham, but it is the first of a bunch of Alzheimer's walks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be all right. What time's the walk?
I think the walk starts at 10 or 11.
10 or 11. Okay, yeah. Well, it should be starting to clear, if not light rain, I would think at the most. I could be wrong.
Well, you don't want to stay in the house, right? As soon as it stops raining, get out there.
Get out and go to the walk.
You're just going to need a light jacket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's all.
So the walk is the Schenectady Walk. It's at Mohawk Harbor, so right next to Rivers Casino.
So something to do after the walk.
Right? Yeah, if you said, hey, I want to see what Phil looks like, well, you can go there and see what Phil looks like. Or you can meet Brady Melissa. We have a couple people there. They'll be manning
Melissa,
the table.
Huh? Well, that's great.
Yeah. So nice. If you got nothing going on, that's the walk that's going on this weekend. There are a couple more walks. I was going to bring this up later, Jamie, but I might as well bring it up now. So on October apparently is the month of events.
There's a lot of
events, a lot of walks, a lot of webinars, a lot of seminars. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, October 14th, there are two walks. So if you said, well, you know what, Schenectady is a little too far away from me. Well, good news for you. On the 14th of October, there's an Alzheimer's walk for Columbia Greene County.
And I'll be at that one.
So, if you wanted to see what Jay Marie looked like, well, there you go there.
There you go.
And if you said, you know what, I keep hearing this Kim person. I really want to meet Kim. Well, she'll be manning the table along with Terry at the Alzheimer's Walk in Queensbury. This is all on October 14th. And then the big one, October 21st, our Albany Walk will be at Siena College. It's a wonderful walk.
That's great.
And John has already assured me it will not be raining on October 21st.
Well,
so thank you, John.
I'm not making no guarantees here.
Well, what was that? What did you say before? It sounded like a guarantee.
No, it didn't. No, we should be all right. I mean, you know, it's going to get better as the day goes on.
Do you think it's raining in Niskayuna?
I don't know.
Well, let's ask Joe. Joe from Niskayuna, how are you, Joe?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Is it raining out there?
It's cloudy.
Okay. That's a good sign.
That's
a good sign for
us. Yeah.
It's close.
What's going on?
I have a question. I have savings bonds that I put onto the Treasury Direct account. Online account area, and I want to transfer those into my irrevocable trust, and I'm not sure how to do that, and I wonder if you can provide any guidance here.
Well, you already did the big first step, right, Jamie, which is to register the bonds with Treasury Direct. So a lot of people out there, Joe, we're going to use this as a learning moment for everyone, not just you who have already found Treasury Direct. So if you guys have those old paper bonds, I have a bunch of them from relatives. They have serial numbers on them, and you could actually go to a website, Treasury Direct, and you could put in those serial numbers and see what they're worth now. And, you know, gone are the days of these paper bonds. Now they're kind of, I'll say digital, but they're registered. And just like you could go online and create that Treasury Direct account, Joe, you can go online and request forms to change the ownership of those bonds as well. So you would go to Treasury Direct to handle the changing of the title.
Okay. And do you have any kind of starting point. It's kind of a cumbersome site to work with.
I know. Most sites like that right. are. What we could do, Joe, if you don't mind, you could email our firm at info@herzoglaw.com, and we'll make sure that someone reaches out to you to kind of give you the couple steps there. If I had the site up, we would make everyone fall asleep, but we would go mm-hmm. step by step on how to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I would mention, Joe, is that these bonds, you know, there may be some tax impact from changing ownership on them. Somewhat like when people have CDs, if they break a CD, that might be a taxable event. For a lot of people, the bonds they have already matured and they never ended up paying any taxes on them. They're just sitting there. And there might be some sort of tax impact to you.
I see. So would they actually be cashed in and then reissued?
Well, they're going to the title is going to change, but the problem is that if they already matured, that maturing moment was when there would have been taxes to be paid. So it might be something where all of a sudden now you're going to be paying taxes for something that matured a number of years ago.
I understand. Yeah, right now as they're maturing, they're being cashed in, but the ones that are out there are still
okay. So then that won't be that should not be a taxable event at all.
Okay, great. All right, thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Joe. All right. How'd it do, Jay Marie?
You did well.
Okay,
very
good.
Well. Yes, I know certainly our paralegals know exactly what form to use and how to work around that website. So
yeah,
Janice. I'm thinking of in particular has a lot of experience with that.
Well, you know, it's funny because she has experience when we have to do the final distribution and liquidation
That's
of those
right.
things. So
that's right. So
it's very similar. Mm-hmm. But Joe brings up a very good fact, which is that things like savings bonds are assets that the government cares about. And when we're talking about Medicaid eligibility, right, he's talking about funding, sounds like a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. Mm-hmm. A savings bond is exactly one of those things you should be funding it with.
And yeah, that's great because a lot of clients, that's kind of down on their list, you know, or they forget about it. And we, you know, when we go to apply for Medicaid, oh, I forgot to tell you, I have like some bonds in the safe deposit box, right?
Yeah.
And that could, you know, really affect your Medicaid eligibility if it's not in the trust.
Now, those bonds, Jamie, they could also have beneficiaries on them. You can list people on them. And I know a lot of folks who do have those paper bonds. They got it from a great aunt or something like that, and they're just sitting there. And God forbid, when that person passes away, they're going to have something that needs to go through probate because they have an asset in their name with no beneficiary.
That's true. But interesting what you're saying about having a beneficiary on it. I was going to say some people think that means it's not accountable for Medicaid.
Right.
Right. But it is because that beneficiary doesn't take ownership until you die.
Oh, I see what you're doing there, John. She's talking about the difference between protecting money and avoiding probate. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people say, well, I don't have to worry about that. I get this with bank account. That bank account's already has my kids on it.
Mm-hmm,
or
right.
my kids are their transfer on death to my kids, or we're good on that account.
Right.
You're good when you pass.
Right.
You're good when you pass away, right? Okay. We're good on that account. It's going to go poof straight to those kids. But we're not good during your life
right.
in case you have those big-time long-term care needs because the government will say, well, we don't care who gets it when you die. You have access to it now.
Yeah.
Jeremy, this past week, I spoke at a senior center in Cobleskill.
Very nice.
And it was packed. It was like 50 people or so, and then there were a bunch of different vendors, and you know,
that's good.
You think you know, Medicare booths and this booth and that booth and whatever. And it, first of all, it's so nice to be in front of people explaining things. It's so much easier than on a video. It's really nice because then you interact, and then you know, as we're talking, you know, someone asks a question about long term care insurance, and now anytime I mention that word, I'm you know, that's my girl. For long-term care insurance and pointing her out and,
right.
you know, connecting and so on. And there were a couple eureka moments in the room. Mm-hmm. And you could probably guess at what, you know, what eureka moments they were where people in real time learned, well, oh, wait a minute. I thought it was the other way around.
That's right.
And one of them was the idea of avoiding probate compared to protecting assets. Trusts, if it's the right kind of trust, can do both. But a lot of times it's one or the other, and people think that they're avoiding probate because, you know, their house is exempt under Medicaid. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Yes.
And people think that because they have beneficiaries on something, they don't have to worry about it for Medicaid. And a lot of times they're wrong there as well.
Yes, yeah, it's very confusing, which is why we do an in-depth, you know, review of all your assets with you when you come into your consultation. And people are sometimes like, why do I have to give you all this information on the questionnaire? Why do you want to see copies of everything? Oh, because we're going to help you figure out what you have.
Well, and we want to make sure that you know what you have and mm-hmm. what has beneficiaries, what doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, if Jamery does a trust for you and the trust says that everything goes to John Gabriel, as an example.
No, boy.
Congrats, John. Well, that does not apply to any of Jamery's assets that have a beneficiary on it that's not John Gabriel. So uh-huh, if right. Jamery had a savings bond at Treasury Direct and that savings bond had me as a beneficiary,
mm-hmm. right.
Well, the everything that John gets does not include that savings bond.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I mean, someone somewhere is probably saying, well, yeah, thanks, Captain Obvious, for the basic information. But the point is that if Jamery's plan was to leave everything to John, well, her plan is not covered, right? We're not accomplishing her goals. And we need to know, and we need to make sure Jamery knows, well, don't forget about that savings bond you have. Because while you have Dave as the beneficiary, that's not accomplishing your goals. So, you know, Jamery, a lot of what we do is beyond the actual legal documents.
Right. There's homework that the people have to do when they leave.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's contacting banks and financial institutions to follow up and, you know, maybe change ownership on an account or check who's the beneficiary.
Where I see that the most is where people have minor children mm-hmm. and they have a very nice will or they have an older will that says how money goes to those kids. And we're going to give it to them in steps. We're not going to give it to them all at age 18, if God forbid mom and dad pass, et cetera, et cetera. But then something like life insurance still has the kids as people on there.
That's right.
And the money that goes to them in that instance for that asset is not governed by the will. It never went through the will.
Right.
Right. It passed outside the will, which, again, in a different world is a wonderful thing because we get to avoid probate. So it's always like there's like a yin and yang, you know, mm-hmm. pros and cons, double-edged swords, whatever you want to say. And, you know, every fact pattern is different. I got coffee on my way here, and I thought I should ask you, Jamery, how do you take your coffee?
Oh, milk, no sugar.
Milk, no sugar. John?
Depends on where I'm getting the coffee.
For a second, I thought you were going to say you're a tea person.
Oh.
I sense tea.
Well, no, I don't. I like tea, but no, I drink coffee. I drink 3 or 4 cups a day.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, if I'm at home, it's usually half and half. And maybe half a teaspoon of sugar. I don't go with the phony stuff, real sugar.
That's okay. Right.
And I've been doing that for, oh boy, years and years.
Iced coffee, black, no sugar, nothing. Mm-hmm. Lasts me the whole day.
Right.
Oh, there you go.
Well, why do I bring
it
up?
I like it hot.
Really?
Hot, yeah.
I need iced coffee. It could be 3 degrees outside. I need an iced coffee.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Can I just say you leave your iced coffee cups everywhere?
I do.
I mean, there was one in Kingston the other day. So.
Sorry.
It said on
it
cup,
wasn't
Dave
iced
was
by
here.
The time it got to you, Jamery. Well, I'm sorry about that.
I know Dave was here. There's the
yeah, Dave
iced
was
coffee
here,
cup.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to bring up about me, Jamery, while we're on the radio here?
No, that just triggered that memory.
Well, the reason I asked that, yeah. how you guys take coffee is because there isn't like one plan. It's not like there's only one way to take your coffee.
Right.
And everyone's preferences matter. So estate yeah. plans completely matter. And one of the things I wanted to make sure that the listeners at this senior center, one of the lessons they got was that you can't leave thinking you need a trust or you can't think leave thinking you need a certain kind of document other than you really need to talk to someone like me, someone like Jamery, someone like Phil. Even if it's someone at a different firm, the point is you got to talk to an expert and then we got to hash out what your specific plan is because just like everyone takes coffee in a different way, obviously the estate planning needs that someone may have are totally different as well.
Yeah, that's right. They're going to be different for everyone based on what you have. You know, so that's why we need to go through your family situation as well. You know,
yeah.
How are your kids doing? You know, if you don't have kids, who do you want to leave to? Oftentimes, I have people without kids, and they get kind of stuck about who they're going to leave their money to.
Exactly right. You know, I've had a run of people where, they're married for decades and decades, and for one reason or another, their plan doesn't involve leaving things to children, or they don't have children, mm-hmm. and they have a heck of a time figuring out those details, but those details are so incredibly important. John, I have a feeling that we're at the break.
Yeah, we're at the break, and then we'll take a phone call as soon as we get back from the break.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany, Clifton Park, or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. We're back. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And my name is Jane Marie Schaefer.
Jim Murray and I are two attorneys from Herzog Law Firm talking about estate planning and elder law. It's a call-in show where you could reach us at 518-476-5900. We do have a caller. His name is Jim, and he's from New Scotland. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hi. Very well for a rainy day. I have a question about prenuptial agreements as they affect an estate plan. If I execute a prenuptial agreement with my intended and we get married and then we move to another state and things don't work out between us as we thought, is that prenuptial agreement executed in New York State valid in another state?
Yeah, why not? It's a contract. You know, if you have a contract with your credit card company where you're promising to pay your monthly bill and you decide I'm not going to pay my credit card anyway, you can't get away with it just by moving to California. You still have a credit card bill. So it's a contractual obligation.
That's because banking and credit cards are controlled by the feds under the federal commercial law. Prenuptials are executed according to state law.
Well, they are. So let's take the analogy to trusts for a moment. So the trusts that we do, Jim, are governed by New York. There's a situs to the trust. It's a New York trust governed by New York law. You can move anywhere you want, but the fact is still that the laws of New York will govern what you can and can't do with that trust, right? There are still contractual obligations you guys have, and that prenup will likely say that in the event of some sort of dispute, there might be some alternate dispute resolution provisions in there. It may say that the prenup is going to be governed by the laws of the state of New York. So even if you do move out of the state, you do still have responsibilities that prenup doesn't just go away. Now, every state may differ in terms of their matrimonial law. So, you know, if you're waiving certain rights in each other's estate or rights in each other's marital estate, or, you know, this is separate property, this is what she started the marriage with, this is what I started the marriage with, the where you end up living, where the divorce is actually happening, that is going to have a very big say as to the provisions of the prenup and whether there are extenuating circumstances that get around some of those provisions. So in New York, there are rules as to spousal maintenance and some called equitable distribution of your assets. And the prenups talk about that. And they say, this is how it's going to be, but it still needs to go through the court. And there may be situations where there's provisions in the prenup that aren't going to hold up.
It's still, when you say it needs to go through the court, what you're saying is it'll need to go through the court where we're living at the time.
It may be that. Every state's a little different in terms of where you can file for a divorce. For example, in New York, I believe that if you're married in New York, New York can be a venue for the divorce. Where one of the parties is living may be a venue for a divorce in certain states. So it's not just where you're living. There may be people who are living outside of New York that can nonetheless file for divorce in New York because they were married in New York and they were living in New York for quite a while. So the devil's in the details on it. I'm getting outside of my comfort zone on it, but I can tell you for sure you may have legal standing to file a divorce in more than one state.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
I don't get to use some of those words very often, Jamie.
I know. You're drawing on your background there.
Yeah, it felt pretty good, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. How about that? But it is obviously very complicated, and what Jim brings up is he's talking about a contract,
mm-hmm.
right? Some right. sort of legal agreement. That legal agreement will likely, I'll hedge my bets here, but it's going to still be a valid agreement regardless of where you end up living. The ramifications of the terms of the agreement and what state you live in at the time that agreement's being tested are really going to matter. So, mm-hmm. for example, Jamie, if someone walks into our office, they just moved here from Arizona, mm-hmm. they did an Arizona trust or an Arizona will governed by the laws of Arizona, they don't need a New York will. Their Arizona will can get probated in New York.
Absolutely, right. And an Arizona trust will be recognized in New York. But where things happen is if you apply for Medicaid in New York, right, New York rules are going to apply, even though that Arizona trust may be valid. It may have a provision in there that doesn't work in New York.
Right, so New York may say, hey, you know what, in Arizona you were allowed to have $50,000 outside your trust.
Right.
Here it's $30,000, so
that's
you
right.
still don't qualify, but the things mm-hmm. in the trust may be okay,
right.
or maybe, you know, this is less so for Medicaid because, and you know, it's kind of reverse where mm-hmm. we tell people if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. We're New York, after
right.
all.
Mm-hmm.
So if your trust is going to qualify you for Medicaid in New York, we're pretty darn confident it's going to work mm-hmm. everywhere.
Right.
That may not be the case going the other way around.
That's right. So it's very important. You know, when people move here, we say, okay, your documents from another state are valid, but let's sit down and review them anyway. And
yep.
you should do that if you move out of New York as well.
And I know that if someone comes, if you're you know, a transplant to New York, even if you have a valid will, we're going to make sure that you have a New York form of power of attorney and healthcare proxy,
mm-hmm.
because when those documents need to be used, the last thing we want is some sort of legal counsel for the bank wanting 2 weeks to review the Arizona power of attorney to make sure it's still legitimate.
We have a hard enough time getting the New York power of attorney through.
Well, we had there was a bank, we'll not say the name of the bank, but the mm-hmm. bank was demanding that our clients show them the statutory gifts rider on their power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to inform the bank that they stopped doing that in June of 2021.
Right.
And this power of attorney was dated after that, thus mm-hmm. there's no need for the rider.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost our client a week.
Oof.
And it's actually a Medicaid client, so it's a little worse.
If you're trying to move money to become
eligible. We lost 1 month of eligibility, Jamie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's painful.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I hear John talking to one of our friends here, Jamie.
Very lively over there, John.
Is it who I think it is, John?
Well, I don't know. Who do you think it is?
I think it's Phil.
It is Phil. Hey, Phil.
What's up?
Hey, guys. I couldn't resist calling in.
Oh, my God. Phil from Long Island. How's it going, Phil?
Good. I'm driving to Schenectady right now for a little Alzheimer's walk.
We need a weather report from you. Is it raining?
It's a little foggy, some light drizzle, but overall, looks like we're clearing up a little bit. We should be okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
But, hey, I wanted to give some input. I was obviously listening to the show. I had a client yesterday from Florida who came here with a trust and a will, and she thought she had to redo everything, and that's not the case. We have to redo some of the stuff. But I wanted to add also that she wanted to change the trust terms, mm-hmm. and even though it's a Florida trust, I told her we could still do an amendment here in New York.
Mm-hmm. As long as the trust allows that amendment, right, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. But I'm saying that even though it's a Florida trust, if it's drafted correctly, we can still do things here in New York with that trust and change if we need to.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, Phil, what else is going on now that we have you on the phone? How's life?
I'm just looking for a parking spot here. But you guys are doing a great job on the show today.
Thank you, Phil.
Engaging.
Thank you.
Well, enjoy the walk, and everyone out there, if you want to give Phil a visit, the rain will stop, I promise.
Yeah, it should.
Mohawk Harbor, visit the Herzog table.
Yeah.
There's candy there.
There is candy there.
Aww.
See you in a couple minutes, Phil. There's
all
candy
right,
there. Take
that's
care.
Right.
Bye.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Hear from Phil.
That is nice to hear from him. Yeah.
It's not like we see him every day.
Well, we are in all different offices, the three of us, so we don't always see each other every day.
Jeremy, there's one thing I want to really bring up, and I'm sorry to bring up long-term care insurance again, but it came up during the speaking engagement. Mm-hmm. There was, you know, I said, how many people have long-term care insurance? A couple of hands went up. And one of the women who had it mentioned that it's paid up. And I said, that's wonderful, because we were talking about premiums, so she doesn't have a premium. And I said, well, what's your daily benefit? And she said, well, it started at $100.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And she said it's supposed to go up, so she thinks it's about $200. And I said, well, that's wonderful for assisted living.
Exactly. Right.
I said, but unfortunately, it's not big enough to handle the big guns that we're going to need. And a little lesson for everyone out there, again, on long-term care. We're not pro or anti. Just know what you got. Know the benefits. Know your exposure. We have another caller. This is amazing.
Great.
Fourth caller, Garth in Greenwich. Hey, Garth. What's up?
Good morning. Good morning. I have a quick question for you. Single man, never married, no children, want to leave. I have a 403B, work at a local college. Leaving that to a niece, well, I should say not a genuine niece. She's grown up calling me her uncle, best friend's daughter. What is the situation in being able to stretch that? Because I've heard don't ever put an asset like that into a trust, but is there a way to stretch that and also protect it so that if she were to ever be, like, say, in a marital situation that didn't go well, you know, she's going through a divorce, that asset stays with her and doesn't end up being, you know, and end up with you know, the ex-husband. Is there any advantage to putting, and I also thought I heard something that 29 and a half years difference was a big deal. She's 29 years younger, not 29 and a half. I didn't know if that was a critical thing too.
Okay, so real quick on the so if she's in New York says that the assets you have prior to a marriage are your separate property. They're not part of the marital estate. That would be split up in a divorce. It's a factor that can be used to determine how to split up money. And the fact that she's got this big 403B may be a factor, but it's likely not something that a spouse can get, because even if it goes up over time, it was a passive appreciation. She didn't really work hard to make that happen. As to the other point, Jay Marie.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I just have a question. How old is she? Is she over?
She's currently
20. Oh, you just cut out. I think I heard
again,
20, but probably
again,
29
Garth.
Maybe.
Oh, she's 26 years old.
Okay. So I just wanted to see if she was over or under 18. So under the new rules that apply to retirement accounts now, she has to take that out over 10 years. So, if she was under 18, she would, it would wait until she was 18, and then she'd get the 10 years from the time she's 18. But that's the longest you can stretch it out now. They changed that law for many years. She would have been able to stretch it out over her lifetime, which of course is.
Oh, see, I wasn't aware of that. When did they change that?
The SECURE Act. It was about four years ago. Yeah, so they made the retirement age, instead of 70 and a half, it's 72, where you have to take the required minimum distributions. One thing you could do if you were like, hey, look, I really want to put the clamps on this money, you can't change the length of time that it's going to be withdrawn, but you could have it go to a trust. So it's different than putting the retirement in a trust now, but the beneficiary could be a retirement trust you have created. And you do that, Garth, because you're saying, yeah, I know she's going to get this money, but I really don't want her to take it all at once. I want there to be rules on the money. And that's a whole other issue. And, Garth, we should talk offline about it, because we have about 15 seconds before the classical music starts playing.
Less than that. Okay.
Less than that.
Less than that.
So, Garth, let's talk more about that, all right?
Okay.
Thanks so much for the call.
Yep, bye.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
Everyone, go to Mohawk Harbor.
Right.
Schenectady Alzheimer's Walk. Go see Phil, Brady, and Melissa. Take care, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.